Welcome back, everybody, to the Trade Riders Podcast, the comic book club, where we read a different trade paperback every single week. I'm Daniel. Thank you so much for joining me today, Nathan. We're brothers. We read comics.
Yes, thank you for being my co-host. Another week.
Yeah, hanging in there.
Hanging in there.
We're almost there. I don't know what there is, but we're almost there.
We're almost past the finish line.
We're almost to 1,000. We're almost caught up with Joe Rogan, who does like 3 a week.
Oh, shit. We have to read more trades to surpass Joe Rogan, our ultimate goal of this podcast.
Well, if we want to surpass him, we got to do more than he does. So we got to do like four trades a week.
Wow. Yeah. I can't even read that fast. Yeah. I'm pretty sure if I tried doing that, it would like have the adverse effect and I'd become like illiterate or something.
You just get stupid.
So for now, I think the strategy is just to outlast Joe Rogan.
Yeah. You know how like comics kill like brain cells? Like if you read that much, you would just be brain dead.
Pretty much. Yeah. That's the goal. Ultimately, that's our ultimate goal. And we're almost there to that finish line. That's the finish line we're almost there for.
Well, we've almost read all the comics, Nathan.
Yeah, we're working there.
But while we do that, we also have different segments in our podcast. You can find them in the description. Things like Back Matter Matters, The Poll List, The Book, which is Preacher this week. But we start with the news.
All segments that Joe Rogan does not do, by the way.
Yeah, he just jumps in there and talks about nothing.
Yeah. We're here to give you information.
Yeah. Okay. We got theme songs for the segments.
Starting with the news. Nothing's really been happening this week, it seems like.
Pretty slow week.
Yeah, pretty slow week.
But that's good. We'll give us plenty of time for the other segments.
Biggest thing, there's more Dawn of DC stuff, but it's like a second like kind of initiative called the New Golden Age. There were 3 6-issue miniseries to launch in October announced, including Alan Scott, The Green Lantern.
Oh, cool.
By Tim Sheridan and Cian Tormey. Jay Garrick, The Flash by Jeremy Adams and Diego Alortegui. I don't know his name. And then Wesley Dodds, The Sandman by Robert Vendetti and Riley Rossmo.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
Wait, so like old Sandman.
Like old.
Like the detective one or whatever?
Detective Sandman. Yeah, yeah.
Nice.
Not like the Vertigo Sandman, but yeah.
Yeah, the one that was in JSA.
Yes, exactly.
Six.
Yep, so we got some Golden Age stuff coming in.
Wait, what are the other three? You said six.
No, 3 6-issue miniseries. So those are the three. It's okay. Green Lantern, Alan Scott, Flash, Jay Garrick, and then Wesley Dodds, The Sandman.
Are you excited for the Alan Scott one?
Yeah. I'm always interested to see what they do because it's like sometimes he's like...
Especially in modern times.
Especially in modern times. Like a lot of... Like sometimes the big focus is that he's like... super gay and I'm like that's cool, and then sometimes people like really try and stay away from that. It feels like
his weakness is the wood, Nathan.
I've never put that together in my head. I can't believe you've done this to me. I can't look at him the same way. I'm not gonna pick it up now. No, I'm just kidding,
dude. They set themselves up.
They did, god damn it.
Anyway, so Viz Media is a manga publishing company.
I'm familiar.
They're probably one of the biggest. They are expanding their Viz manga app to include a wider variety of manga available.
Okay.
So they'll include things like Junji Ito stories or some slice of life stuff, more.
They never did that before?
No. So they only had like certain stuff on Viz manga. The one that I use is Shonen Jump, which is like a lot of the
different app.
Different app, same company.
Okay.
The same login. You know what I mean?
Okay.
So Shonen Jump is like normally geared towards like teenage boys, basically, where you'd have like Naruto and like One Piece and stuff like that. Okay. Things are, it's like superheroes and stuff.
Not gotcha.
But they're trying to...
For men.
Right. They're trying to expand their selection by having like slice of life stuff and horror like Junji Ito, things like that.
You ever read any slice of life mangas?
Yeah. What did I read? Beck, that one music one.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
So it's somewhat slice of life, you know? And so I thought, oh, all these things are going to be like available to like kind of like, you know, stream basically. Mm-hmm. And it's not the Shonen Jump stuff. It's just the stuff that they added. You know what I mean? Which is kind of odd.
Right.
And they are making it a thing to where they have the English translations the same week as like the Japanese chapters, which is like, I thought they did already, but I guess they're stepping up their game on that.
They would be in print presumably for a little bit of time, but then when they upload them to the app, they would have the translations ready
right at the
same time. Okay.
Yeah. So that's what they're shooting for.
That's cool.
Yeah, it's a little weird. So the Junji Ito stuff, you can't like stream. They're just having it available to buy on their app. And it's like a different subscription from Shonen Jump, which is like a little odd. I thought it was just going to be like a one-stop shop kind of thing. But you can't like stream the Shonen Jump stuff on the Viz Manga app, which is odd.
Yeah, that seems weird.
And so I don't know.
So they're just putting it all together.
But the most exciting thing for me is that they added Zom 100. That zombie manga that I was telling you about, which I have been reading. So I'll be able to be completely caught up on that. And I wouldn't have to wait for the trades to come out.
So good news for Daniel.
Good news for me and me only.
Okay, good.
Yeah, it was weird because when I signed up for that, it signed me out of the Shonen Jump app for some reason. And like, I didn't have a subscription on that one for some reason. There might have been some bug with it.
So there's no like single sign-on thing where you can...
Yeah, it's not. It's two separate apps. It's very weird.
That's dumb.
Yeah. And what's even funnier is that the day before this was announced, I bought the next volume of Zom 100. I'm like, those motherfuckers.
You fucking idiot.
Yeah.
They got you.
They're like, let's wait for Daniel to buy some more.
They're like, it went through. Go, go, go.
And then we'll drop. We're good. But they made it seem so big because like the CEO made like a video talking about it as if a new iPhone dropped, you know. It was just.
Is he up on the stage?
Yeah. He's talking about it. And anyway. It could be good for some people, and they've added a lot of other stuff that I don't read, but you know, maybe other people might like it.
Yeah.
So,
well, speaking of that, Apple launched a webtoon comics publisher for the Apple Books app.
Interesting.
So they've signed a 3-year deal with South Korean startup Kenaz, KENAZ, to publish webtoons, vertically scrolling comics made famous by the South Korean publisher Webtoon. And so, yeah, it's going to be for 3 years and they're going to make exclusive stuff over there.
That seems like a big swing for them.
Yeah. And I guess a big thing was like the founder of Kenaz was like, there's not really like a North American, there's not like a huge North American market for webtoons as of yet. Mm-hmm. And so I think this is kind of part of their strategy to try and get that going. And if it does blow up and if it's like even like a fraction of the popularity that it is in like Korea or you know Japan, anywhere else, like that'll be a pretty big get for Apple.
Yeah.
So
how does Sophia read Lore Olympus?
Webtoons.
So it's like a website and
it's an app. Yeah. Oh, app, okay. Website. I don't know how you get them. Like I assume you pay for them. I don't know if it's like a subscription or what. But yeah, she's real into it. So
nice.
Pretty interesting move from Apple.
Definitely. Someone asked James Gunn if he was going to have anyone from the Guardians of the Galaxy's movies in Superman Legacy, and he said yep.
Yeah,
so
there was Pratt like memeing that he was going to be Crypto.
I could see that.
Yeah, I could see that.
Does too, Crypto even like talk to Superman?
No.
Okay,
he just barks. Seems to me, Daniel, you haven't seen the best DC movie of last year, DC's League of Super Pets.
I have not.
Still pretty good.
I saw a bunch of photoshops of Vin Diesel in the Superman outfit. It's so ridiculous.
God, a bald Superman would be insane.
Yeah.
I don't care what race he is or whatever, but he needs to have hair. That's the only thing I won't like let up on.
It could be like a Earth 3 Superman or something.
Even still.
Anyway. But
Harry Styles is getting his own comic book.
Oh, great.
Just about him. It's from that Tidal Wave comics publisher, and I think they've done that with like other celebrities, so I don't know what their deal is. They just like are the trying bag? To get celebrities. Yeah, I guess so. Yeah,
that's good. That could bring, you know, younger readers to comic shops.
They're like, where's probably the Harry Styles?
Primarily female into comic shops, you know, they see something else next to this Harry Styles book.
Yeah.
It's going to boost things all around.
It's going to chronicle his biggest accomplishments and the story of how he rose to fame, as if the people that would go and buy it.
It's didn't a bio know that. Comic.
It's a bioic. It's a biomic.
Biomic. Oh my God. I hate that. We know how it happens. He was on like X Factor with One Direction.
Yeah. Anybody that would buy that comic knows.
Yeah.
They're not going to be like, oh, I wonder what Harry Styles is about. You know?
I'm glad that he didn't take the route of just making like an autobiography and then, you know, he just went like, no, it's just being a comic.
I'd be surprised if he knows about this, to be honest.
About comics?
Yeah. About this comic specifically about him. I doubt something he's real passionate about.
He's probably got like a ghostwriter or like a...
Yeah, 100%.
Or like a collaborator to kind of write like...
I assume he just has a manager and the manager said yes.
Yeah, the publicist like just handles everything.
Yeah.
That's interesting.
Yeah. So that's how deep I was at the bottom of the barrel trying to get some news. That's everything I have.
Okay, Nathan, let's get into our...
All the news articles this week were like, oh my God, free comic book day. And yeah. I was like, I know, I was there. Chill out. But anyway.
Yeah. So this week we read Preacher, didn't we, Nathan?
We read Preacher. From Vertigo.
From Garth Ennis.
Holy shit. You got the whole thing. I didn't even notice that was there until
Steve
right now.
Steve Dillon. Yeah. I got this monster. Jesus. Can kill you with this.
Oh, you've had that one.
I've had this one.
You know, I look at it all the time. I didn't even... It's normally right behind you, and I look at it, and I'm like, that looks like it would be pretty good.
Yeah. Quite the nut crusher.
Oh, dude.
I had to, like, put a pillow between me and the book in order to read it because it hurt too much. Bad. And then I had to, like...
It was too much God.
...use both my hands to, like, keep the pages open.
Oh,
it,
yeah.
It was quite a chore. But
this is your first time reading it?
No, I have it here. Oh, reading that, yes.
Yeah, okay.
It was in plastic.
Yeah, so...
So what did you think, Nathan? Is this what you expected?
Just about. I mean, I've seen, like, a season and a half of the show, and I was like, there's no way this... really aligns with the comic book that much. I think I liked it a little bit more than I thought I would because Garth Ennis and then comics that fuck with like religion and stuff are not normally things I gravitate towards.
Right.
Especially Garth Ennis. He's hit or miss. He's like the most hit or miss for me, I feel like.
Okay.
But I think I just love Steve Dillon enough to be like, this is really cool. Because the book, I think, has like a lot of just like dialogue and just like normal shit that happens, but they do a really good job balancing like how just normal like kind of like their situation is, or like they're just like three people trying to get around, right? And then there's like this whole mystical, like, I don't even know what religion is supposed to be, like Christianity thing going on, like heaven and hell sort of thing going on. I just like the juxtaposition it feels like that is, because when there's not like heaven and hell shit going on, it's like there's just people like shooting each other over here, right? Mm-hmm. And so I feel like normally if a book mixes the two of them, it's just not done as well. I don't really know why this book feels like it does it well, but I actually really liked this.
Yeah. I think first time around, I was just so used to the show, and I think I was expecting the artwork to look like Glenn Fabry's covers. And so when it wasn't, it was like a little shocking, I guess, because I wasn't familiar with Steve Dillon. I've read this book before, and I definitely liked it a lot more on the second go around.
Okay.
I don't know. But Steve Dillon has definitely like perfected like his style, you know?
100%.
Like there's nothing wrong with anything in this. And it's just like you get used to how he draws the characters, and then he just does it perfectly every time.
He's just like so good at like the details of like people's faces and like the acting of like the different characters and stuff, and keeping that interesting somehow, where I would just like every like panel with like Jesse Custer, I'm like, man, look at how fucked up his hair is, but it looks cool, you know?
Yeah.
Or like all the different characters and how he like renders them, he just really nails. So it's just like interesting to look at.
So if you remember, the first season of Preacher was basically all of his time in Anvil. And then the end of that season ended up with like the church exploding.
Right.
Right. And then that's kind of like where this book starts, but has like some flashbacks to that.
Yeah. Time. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I was trying to remember. I just remember the first episode being so insane.
A great episode. I've rewatched it not that long ago, and I'm like, this is such a good fucking show.
I thought it like put me off of the show. I was like, what the fuck was that?
Because we didn't know what to expect.
If I were to rewatch it, would I like it?
Yeah, you would love it.
Really?
Because you know what to...
I don't think so.
You know what to expect now.
But the first episode, it felt like it was so different than the rest of the season. I actually ended up really enjoying the first season of the show.
Yeah, great first season.
But that first episode just seems like such an outlier.
We just knew that Preacher was a comic. That's all we knew about it. And that there was a show.
Yeah.
And so now that you know, like, kind of the flavor of the show, yeah, they put a lot into the pilot, you know, in order to get picked up and get people interested in it. But we didn't know about like Arseface. We didn't know about like just kind of how vulgar it could be, you know? But no, rewatching it, it's like a very exciting episode.
I'll have to do that.
Yeah, it's fun on AMC, wherever you get that.
Who knows?
I think there's AMC Plus if you want your own subscription to that. But
how long does the show run?
Three or four seasons.
How far did you get?
I finished it.
Oh, you watch it all?
Yeah.
Pretty good?
The first season's the best, and then it like the later ones just kind of like...
dwindles a little bit?
Not like dwindle, but it just kind of stays kind of stagnant. It's like a very weird story, of course, and things that happen in it are really weird.
Yeah.
I think most of it, you're just kind of trying to prepare for that.
Mm-hmm.
And so... I don't know how like accurate it was and how, if they were able to do like all the arcs that they wanted or probably just not. All the arcs in the book.
Because how long is the book?
Like 66 issues.
Oh, really? I thought it would have been longer.
Yeah. And then there's like a spinoff run with like the Santa Killers. And then
ooh, that's cool.
And then I think a couple like one shots.
Wow. Is it all Dylan the whole time?
I think so. Yeah.
What a legend.
Yeah,
I need to read more Dylan stuff. Is what I recognized because he did Punisher.
Punisher, that was with Becky Cloonan.
I thought it was with Ennis. Oh no, the last thing that he was doing was Punisher with Cloonan, right?
I think so.
Yeah, I remember that. That's crazy.
Yeah, I have that.
Yeah, I think I have it too. So anyway, let's get into the book. So we got Jesse Custer, good name.
Good name.
Cassidy and Tulip. They're all in like a diner and they're like, man, how did we get here, huh? And then Jesse, who's a preacher, it starts with like a little flashback of him. He just became a preacher. He gets into a bar fight. Not the typical preacher sort of actions, mm-hmm. but Tulip shot some dude and then was running away and ran into Cassidy, who helped her get away. And that's kind of the starting point of the different arcs for those characters. And I feel like Dylan is so good at like the faces and like the rendering and like all that stuff that when there's the scenes that get bloody, they're like really shocking because he eases you in with his character work and then the violence like really stands out, which I like.
Yeah.
So when Tulip like shoots his guy and his jaws off, you're like, what the fuck? Like, it's insane. Yeah. Also, it's crazy that Matt Hollingsworth did the coloring for this because I thought he was like kind of like a newer color artist.
Yeah, maybe this is kind of one of his earlier gigs.
Yeah. But the coloring is like really good in this as well.
Yeah.
But meanwhile, in heaven, some shit got out and they're like, these angels are like, damn, we got to go get that. And so they hire this dude named the Saint of Killers, who's like a godlike assassin dude, to go get Genesis, which is the being that escaped. And Genesis runs into Jesse while it's just like running around Earth. And when they morph together, it causes like the whole church to blow up.
He like flies into Jesse.
Yeah, it doesn't like run into him like all like yeah. bump into him and like Jesse's books fall down.
Yeah.
No, it like flies into him. And I really like just the variety of designs that exist with like the mystical or like the biblical stuff that's happening.
Mm-hmm.
Like the angels and the demons and like, you know, Genesis obviously looks pretty interesting. I just appreciate the length that Steve Dillon went to put those together.
All the angels have sick mohawks.
Yeah. I was wondering what
that was. That's what my angels look like. Super fucking metal.
And like, there's kind of like a foreshadowing here too. Cause when Genesis enters him and there's this like splash page,
mm-hmm.
He's clearly like half devil, half angel, which we find out is, you know, Genesis is half demon, half angel.
Yeah.
And so I didn't notice that until just now, but that's pretty cool. I don't know why it causes like the whole fucking church to blow up, but
yeah, in the show,
everybody gets like incinerated.
In the show, it's just like,
that's when he's like calling on to God, right?
It was like a jammed septic tank or something and the whole town blew up. It wasn't. Yeah.
Oh, okay. Interesting.
Yeah. I remember it being like,
they definitely tweaked it. Cause he already had the voice up at this point, right?
Yeah. He had it prior to this.
Correct. Yeah. I just remember that like finale episode, he's like talking to God a little bit or something there, right?
Yeah.
And I was like, damn, this is ballsy.
Yeah. I was like, oh my God, can you do this?
Yeah. I imagine how they felt like writing this, because mm-hmm. I feel like a lot of these ideas we're kind of like used to now, but like when Vertigo was first happening, there's no way someone was making any book close to, oh, this guy's trying to like kill God, you know?
He's trying to find him.
Or find him. But whatever. Like, it's just a very interesting and like ballsy concept. So
yeah, and then just kind of, I don't know how, you know, things were in like the 90s or whatever, but you think it'd just be kind of a touchy subject to try and like have your own spin
on just like
Christianity,
religion. Yeah,
yeah, and stuff like that.
Yeah, it's
because you're portraying like how what angels are like, you know, and yeah. Some of them are kind of ignorant, and
Steve Dillon was just tasked with like whatever you think, like, you know, he probably draws God at some point, like whatever you think God looks like, you could put that in there.
Yeah,
or like angels,
like heaven looks odd, not what you think heaven looked like. Not, yeah,
it's a little more pink than I thought.
Not quite a lot of clouds, but it looks like something in space almost.
Yeah. I like this like jail too. Like what the fuck? I think that's not where like everybody hangs out. You know, I think that's like supposed to be the jail where like Genesis was. Or yeah. Like maybe they built that. I don't know.
But and I think that's where they kept like the Sand of Killers. Because they went to him pretty quickly.
No, I think. Actually, I don't know. It must have been like a different part of heaven.
Right.
So, yeah, I don't know. So Tulip and Cassidy, they run into Jesse's body, which is still like alive around all of these just incinerated like churchgoers that mm-hmm. were there. And we find out that Jesse and Tulip used to date. And then the cops are like right on their tail. They're about to shoot them. But then Jesse now has this ability to use the voice of God. And he tells the cops to lay down their guns, and that allows them to get away. But the Saint of Killers shows up like right as they leave. He's like, ah, oh, damn it, I just missed them, you know?
Yeah.
And this is a like oversized first issue.
Yeah, it's very long.
Super long.
But like 48 issues or 48 pages.
Pages about, yeah. But paced pretty well, I would say.
Yeah, I think the rest of it like flies by if you're like pretty focused on it.
Yeah, I agree. I love the lettering and like the color change in his eyes when he's using like the voice of God.
Yeah.
I think it's very effective.
That's the best.
Yeah. There's a super racist cop dude and he just uses the N-word like way too much.
Yeah.
It's like as soon as you meet him, he's thrown out like 3 or 4 hard R's.
Yeah.
He's calling them Martians, you know, or he's convinced that they're Martian, but they're also like the N-word is like in his mind. I'm like, what is this guy talking
about? Yeah. He's just putting on just behind everything.
Insane. But like we get it. So issue 2, the Saint of Killers guns down all those police that were there just about to get Jesse, except for Sheriff Root, who reports the whole thing to like his lieutenant or whatever you call him, his boss. And then he goes home, and then we meet Arseface, which is Sheriff Root's kid who shot himself with a shotgun, but he like lived, and now he's got like this fucked up face, and Sheriff Root never talks to him like ever. And I like that they give us captions to like translate like what he's saying, but I also like to jump back and forth between like the captions and like what Arseface is saying to see how they match up. Because a lot of it's just like huh and duh and like stuff like that because he doesn't have like a tongue or like anything to like pronunciate words very well.
Right.
And it's just fun to kind of like go back and forth. But man, what a character.
What a design.
What a design.
I think
what a dark just thing to think of and put onto a paper, you know?
Like it was pretty bizarre in like the show, you know?
Yeah.
And then you go to the book, it's even more bizarre, like just the way he looks, you know?
Because in the show it's like just his mouth, it seems like, that got affected.
Yeah.
And I assume that's for just like production reasons, like it'd be probably really hard to like do everything, but here like his eyes kind of offset, his nose is all messed up. I hate it in the show haircut. When it's like his lips are all wet and shit too. it's too much.
Yeah. And so that relationship's a little bit different than the show.
I don't even remember what it was like in the show.
Like, I remember...
Was Sheriff Root in there?
Yeah, he was a little bit more chill, though. Mm. You remember in Hellblazer, where Constantine was saying sodding all the time?
Sodding?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was like fucking...
It was like a bloody, you know...
Yeah, or something like that. Mm-hmm. Cassie says that in like the first issue. Oh, hey, there it is.
Yeah, that's that.
This is the and this has like very colorful language, so I don't know why he'd feel the need to say that, you know?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
I hope when that's I go funny. To the UK, I hear someone say it at least once. You're just like, to know like, that it's real, you know?
Yeah, and then you could be like, you're like John Constantine.
Oh, wait, no. Cassie's Irish, so need to go to Dublin.
Is Constantine?
I know he's British.
Yeah.
So maybe even more so.
They share. Yeah.
I'm waiting for it.
So in heaven, the angels on the case to get Genesis are like drinking because they're like, man, we're in for some heat with the grail, whatever that means, which I think is just funny. Like, I like the establishing shot, which is just like a blank background because they're in heaven and it's just like a table and he's just drinking there.
Yeah.
Like, what do these people do on their free time?
Nothing.
They just drink, I guess. And Jesse and friends, they go to get some new clothes. They go to a diner. They get into a fight. And then they see Cassidy get stabbed in the eye. And then he's biting the flesh off of some dude's neck. So he's a vampire, obviously. They kind of like allude to it. Or more than allude to it. Because he like doesn't come out in the daytime. Like when him and Tulip were driving around, he would just like hide under a tarp in like the bed of the truck.
Yeah.
Which I thought was kind of funny.
Did you pick up on this dude?
Yeah, there's some dude that is just kind of like in the shadows that keeps talking to Jesse, and I don't really know who that is. You don't ever find out who it is.
So
in this trade, at least.
Yeah, they do. They explain it.
Oh, who is it?
How many issues did you read?
Just the 7.
Okay. So this is kind of like a conscience for him, but it's like a conscience that also knows more than he does, you know, and like helps him out in a way. So this is John Wayne. Do you know who John Wayne is?
Yeah.
Who's that?
You tell me. I'm testing you now. Why don't you explain it for our listeners who don't know Dan?
John Wayne is a cowboy.
Of course.
He's mostly a cowboy in movies and TV and stuff back in the day. And Jesse Custer, like...
Is he just like public domain cowboy? Like you just use him whenever, I guess?
I think he straight up say John Wayne in this.
Yeah, like they
do. In the later issues.
But I'm wondering. Anyway.
I think you can use people's names, kind of like Obama and stuff. You're like, you know, when they have like presidents in
comics.
Yeah, you know how like Obama was in Suicide Squad, he's in like Rebirth or whatever,
and they're like,
it has his face in it, like they don't allude
to say Obama.
Yeah, and they draw Obama.
I feel like Marvel always hides the presidents in like silhouette or whatever.
Yeah, DC's is like, here's Obama.
They're like, it's okay, Mr. Obama, I'll go get fucking I'll go get Clayface.
Yeah
anyway, keep going. So John Wayne.
So yeah, John Wayne is, they do this in the show too, which is kind of cool. They do it in like the later seasons, but it's just kind of a voice of reason, I guess, or like kind of like a conscience, like I was saying.
Interesting.
And so I just doubted that you knew who John Wayne was.
Obviously I didn't.
Yeah.
No, or obviously I did. So wait, does that amount to anything in the show? Like, who does John Wayne guy is? Does he end up becoming like a character, or is it like a way for somebody else to communicate with Jesse?
It's like not a character necessarily. It's just someone who's like kind of that always just talks to Jesse. You know, no one else sees him.
Yeah,
it's just kind of like in his head.
Interesting. Yeah, I didn't know that. So issue 3, the whole gang figures out that Cassidy is a vampire, as if like hiding from the sun wasn't like enough to,
so even though I get sunburned.
Yeah. So Jesse uses the voice to make Cassidy stop eating people, and then Cassidy gets pissed and he leaves.
This is my favorite cover.
Dude, yeah, these covers are unreal, by the way.
So good.
What was his name again?
Cassidy? Oh, Glenn Fabry.
Glenn Fabry. What else does he do? Because it looks familiar.
Hellblazer.
Oh, is he doing like those Hellblazer covers?
Yeah.
The ones that,
a lot of Vertigo stuff.
The ones that we read?
Yeah.
Okay. That's why it looks familiar.
Mm-hmm.
The Saint of Killers is like following their trail. He kills some cops, and then Sheriff Root hears about it, and he's more than happy to like jump on the case to get away from his son, which is fucked up. And then Arseface is like, well, I want to go with my dad. So he hides in like the backseat.
Yeah.
It's like, and it's actually like brutal how sweet Arseface is, just trying to, you know, be nice and have a relationship with his dad. And he just like gets denied every time.
He talks to him about his day, gets him a beer.
And he gets him a beer and he just drinks it in silence. And then any reason to get out of the house, he takes it. And it just feels awful.
Yeah.
So Jesse and Tulip, they get a motel. Cassidy runs into the Saint of Killers in a bar and Cassidy gets shot. And then the Saint of Killer leaves. And there's like so many dead men in there.
Yeah.
It's like super brutal. And then Jesse bumps his head in the bathroom, and then he has this like whole vision of like Genesis, and Genesis like tells him everything. So Genesis is like the child of an angel and a demon while there was like a war happening between them. And then Genesis is supposed to be like a secret until obviously he escaped. So there's like a whole saga like situation going on.
Yeah.
And then Sheriff Root finds Jesse, and that's that issue. But I kind of like how they gradually uncover like how the whole gods in the system works.
Yeah.
It's kind of fun like learning that.
Yeah. That's what I like about the like kind of fictional, I guess, theology, which yeah. kind of a
in the beginning, I was but. In the beginning, I was like, I don't know what any of this is supposed to be. But if you're just like patient, if you're a patient reader.
Yeah, it'll reveal itself.
Yeah, it does in like a satisfying way. So in issue 4, Sheriff Root takes them both outside and the Saint of Killers is there.
Hold on one sec. So this is Jesse as a child watching TV.
Uh-huh.
And then it says like, hey, Pilgrim on the TV.
Yeah. Why do the people keep calling him Pilgrim? Is that John Wayne?
That's what John Wayne says, I guess. Okay. And so you can see his hand reaching out of the TV. And so it just kind of becomes like.
Oh, so that's just like his like guidance to like do good.
Yeah. Kind of like his hero. Like, yeah. Like a moral compass kind of thing.
Okay. So like if I was, you know, a kid and I was watching Spider-Man.
Yeah.
You know, my consciousness would be like Spider-Man. Be
what
like,
would
hey.
Spider-Man do?
Yeah, exactly.
So what would John Wayne
okay,
do?
Okay, I don't think I caught that. I wasn't really sure what was going on here, to be honest.
I think because I've read it before, you're able to like pick up a lot of those things. And then yeah. watching the show just kind of... When you watch...
Cements a lot of that.
When you watch the adaptation first, I think it helps with the flow of reading the source material. Because then you're able to just like look for things yeah. and stuff like that.
It is an interesting way to experience comics. Like after... like going to the comic after... consuming like the adaptation of it,
which is kind of like the purpose, you know, essentially in a way for an adaptation.
Yeah.
So be a real fan, you know.
So the Saint of Killers is there, they're all like outside, and it's a whole thing. Cassidy tries driving into the Saint of Killers, but he stands there just like as if he just like ran into a tree. Like he just, the whole car crumples around him, and then Cassidy gets shot out.
He's like, I showed Sarah this panel. It's like, your ma's a whore.
Oh, a whore.
For some reason in like the Sopranos, like they're in Jersey, right? So they have like Jersey accents.
Yeah.
They don't say like whore or anything. They say whore.
A whore?
Whore. And it's so fucking funny.
I feel like that doesn't have the same weight.
It doesn't. And it sounds off compared to like their accents. You know what I mean?
I like, feel like
their
they would accents say like whore or something.
Yeah. That, yeah. Like they're not like... their accents aren't that thick, but they all say hua the same way. And so that's why I showed her this, because it was really funny.
Yeah, it is funny.
And then like Cassie's body's on the ground. He's like, cheer up. You're rescued.
I do love that. He's got a good sass on him.
Yeah, it's like my favorite panel.
Yeah. Yeah, really good scene overall, because there's kind of like a build up to him like being there in general. And then Cassie just kind of comes in out of nowhere and just is no help at all, which yeah. I think is funny. And, you know, I wish we could see Cassidy like healing himself, because he gets shot by Saint of Killers, but he heals himself by like consuming blood and eating flesh and whatever.
Yeah.
But it's more so just explained when he like talks to himself to go save like Jesse, you know?
Oh, yeah. He like...
it's never like shown. It's just Cassidy's like talking to himself in like this made up situation.
Yeah. And he has like two like points of view that he's talking.
Yeah.
And no, that was a good scene.
Mm-hmm. But I wish we could see it. Happening from like, you know, him eating people or whatever. But
did you say that Jesse like called him like an abomination?
No.
Yeah, that when they first found out, that's what he said. And that's why Cassidy stormed off.
Yeah,
and then he like, you know, chose to forgive him and then came and tried to save him.
Yeah. So Santa Killers is about to shoot both Jesse and Root, but R-Space runs in because he was hiding in Root's car. And Jesse uses the voice of God to get Saint of Killers to holster his gun. And then he forces him to bring down the people that hired Saint of Killers, which is a really fun scene.
Yeah.
Because he brings down the Blanc, which is like the angel that hired him, or one of them. And he comes down and he's like this like super majestic glory of the heavenly ghost or whatever.
Yeah.
And then he's like, cut the shit. And then it's just like the lame dude with like the mohawk again, which yeah. I think is fun. And he's forced to explain that God just quit and like after Genesis was created, I guess he was just like fed up and he's like, this sucks. And so he quit. And so now Jesse decides that he's going to go find God and make him admit to the people that he quit, I guess.
Yeah, because this is like the first time where God realized that there was like another power as powerful as him, mm-hmm. which is Genesis. And yep. so he split. And the archangels have been in charge. And so DeBlanc is just like one of the normal angels, I guess.
Yeah. So there's Adephi and Seraphi.
Yeah.
Is that like a real, is that a Christian thing?
I don't know those words, but I just know like archangel and angel.
Is this real lore?
We'd have to ask a priest.
Okay. But yeah, it's interesting seeing like the class, like the archangels are like the soldiers. And then there's people like running the operations of heaven, it seems like.
Yeah.
And they're always like shit on. It's like in the other guys where you have like The Rock and Sam Jackson. Like
yeah.
Those are the archangel ones. And then it's like Will Ferrell, who's like probably doing most of the work or whatever.
Yeah.
That's what I liken it to.
Do you remember the angels in the show? Like yeah. DeBlanc?
I don't remember what DeBlanc looks like specifically.
Yeah. I'll look it up.
I think I remember the archangel looking ones though. Didn't they have like wings and stuff?
I don't remember. So that is Fior and DeBlanc.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, I like them. They're fun.
Oh yeah, no, they're awesome.
I wonder like what conversations happen to like get from this to like some guys in suits wearing cowboy hats.
Can we do the Mohawk? Be like, it's a little impractical. Just put a cowboy hat on.
Yeah, I think it's really funny. So Jesse tells the Sand of Killers to get lost, and then he tells Root to go fuck himself, which literally happens. He like takes his dick off and shoves it in his ass. And he's like in the ambulance and he talks to his son for the first time since Arsface attempted suicide to tell him to like get his gun. And Arsface is like, yes, you finally talked to me or whatever. And then Root just like offs himself. He shoots himself in the ambulance and like the blood splatter goes over Arsface. And it's just like a horrible scene.
Yeah.
Like you feel so bad and you look at like, you can see just the shock on like Arsface on his face. It's just awful. I feel really bad for him. Like it's just bad.
And then in heaven we see Arsface like screaming into the heavens or whatever.
Oh yeah.
He's like, I'll have my revenge, Jesse Custer.
Yeah, like, bro, you are so misguided in all this. But I guess like in a way he's kind of right. But anyway, in heaven the angels, the Adephi angels are sentenced to like limbo or something. And then Jesse and friends are like on their way to go find God.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like here's like a good spot where they could have wrapped up like volume one, but it would have only been like four issues, technically. Right. Five.
I mean, what is that? Like still 124 pages.
Yeah. Pretty solid. But
I mean, it might have been like a first trade back when they had like the littler trades.
Yeah.
Vertigo nowadays is just all real big stuff.
Yeah, exactly. Which is fine because I was enjoying it. Or I enjoy this book. So issue five, we meet some new characters, Detective Tool and Detective Bridges in New York. Tool's like this unlucky cop guy. And Bridges is like this super cop that's like highly praised, but he gets a little high tempered. They're on the case to find a serial killer named the Reaver Cleaver. And
The
Reaver Cleaver.
Thank you.
And he just captured another victim and he tore off their face and he nails it back on pretty much. And God, what a fucked up thing that is definitely a Garth Ennis creation.
Yeah.
You know, but poor Steve Dillon had to figure out what someone's face looks like under their face.
Probably a medical journal or something.
Yeah, but it's just all gross. Also, I feel like that'd be really hard. If you're going to take off someone's face, there's no way you're doing that clean, you know?
Yeah. And I feel like you wouldn't just like outline it to pull it off. I feel like you'd have to like cut like under to
really dig in there. Yeah.
You got to fillet it perfectly.
Like, you ever like cook an egg and it like doesn't come off in all one piece? You're just like scraping it off.
Yeah.
That's what I feel like it would be like. So anyway, Jesse and Tulip and Cassidy, they're in New York. They're like, where do we start to like find God? And Cassidy's like, I got a friend that specializes in like UFO sightings. And he's also like a reporter. And he's covering the Reaver Cleaver as like a reporter. And then back at the precinct, Detective Tool overhears that everyone thinks that he sucks. So there's always has to be someone that gets like all the shit in Ennis's story.
Yeah.
And while Arseface is like doing something else, it's like Detective Tool, it feels like.
Right. There's always going to be just like someone you got to feel bad for.
Yeah, you know? Just got to like throw all the shit at and be like, oh, I'm rooting for this guy now. So Jesse and Cassidy go to the Empire State Building. We find out about like Jesse's motivations for good, pretty much. Now he's not going to like abuse the voice of God. And then Cassidy is like super old because he like doesn't age really. And we find out that Detective Bridges has some kind of secret.
And Cassidy just jumps off the Empire State Building.
Yeah, what is that? Because he like grabs onto something as well. So
he jumps off to make it seem like he, because he knows he'll like survive if he hits the bottom. Yeah. But he just grabs the bottom, grabs like a ledge to scare him.
Yeah, and I'm like, what was that? Just commit, you know?
It's pretty funny though.
Yeah. So that was issue 5.
Just commit.
Yeah, like if you're, I don't know. I was like, what did he grab onto? Does he have? He's got crazy finger strength.
Look at him. There's like cracks in the building.
He shoves. Yeah.
He made holes.
How did he get that leverage? Issue 6. Jesse overhears Tulip talk about that shootout that she was in. But Tulip catches Jesse eavesdropping. And they have like this really dumb fight. And then Detective Bridges and Tool are on the Reaver Cleaver case talking to the family of the next victim. I guess his MO is that he mails body parts to the family.
Hmm.
Which is, didn't that happen?
Probably.
I'm probably thinking of like a Dexter show or something, but I hate this reasoning that like Tulip is sticking around because she wants to know why Jesse left her.
Yeah.
I'm sure there's some like ulterior motive or whatever for her sticking around, but this is like kind of a weak one for like the reader to believe.
Right.
I feel like, cause there's a lot of like crazy shit that's been happening up to this point. So it's hard to believe that she'd just like stick around. We also get an F-bomb slur as well.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So
that's like the cop being just kind of ridiculous.
Yeah. And then back at the precinct, the Reaver Cleaver calls Detective Tool to like set up a line of contact with him. Jesse and crew go to Cy's house, who's the reporter dude, and they try and work with him for any leads on God. And he talks about a blind man that walks around based on faith of God guiding him. And so they're like, I don't know, maybe he knows something.
Mm.
And so they leave to like go to this guy's house. But Detective Tool gets another call from the Reaver Cleaver to give away his address. Jesse and Tulip leave with Cy to go talk to this dude who's apparently seen God. But Cassidy discovers that Cy is the Reaver Cleaver like killer. And then Cy stabs Tulip's hand and sticks her to the dash.
Yeah, Cassidy discovers it just from like
looking in his fridge.
Looking in his fridge, and there's like body parts in there.
Like, do better, you know.
And why would you put him in the fridge? Doesn't that go in the freezer?
It should go in the freezer.
And you got people like chilling at your house, you know?
Yeah, like he wasn't even there like at first either. They could have just been like, oh, let's see if he has beer, and they would have found out.
Yeah.
Before he even like got there with beer, you know.
And this isn't the first time that they're at his house. Or his apartment.
Yeah, exactly. So it's like, what? Surely you have like a big freezer, you know, like Dahmer or whatever.
Yeah.
So he doesn't seem like a great killer. But I feel like next issue, when like you find out how he orchestrated everything, I'm like, okay, this is kind of clever.
Yeah.
But issue 7, it turns out Cy gave away his location to the cops, who would catch Cassidy at his place to take blame for all the killings. And then Cassidy finds, you know, the next victim while he's like trying to hide in Cy's place. But since he can't go outside, obviously he kills himself with like a katana that's there.
Yeah, he like fakes his death.
He fakes his death so that he would be put in a body bag and not be going outside and stuff, which is really smart.
Yeah, no, I was like, I don't remember how he got out of this.
Yeah, it was pretty cool. Jesse runs into Detective Bridges, who's doing some kinky gay stuff that he's very ashamed about. Thinking that he was going to go talk to the blind man about God.
Some very BDSM stuff.
Yeah. I hate this panel of the like Reaver Cleaver victim, because you see him and his face is on upside down and it's like nailed to him.
Yeah.
And it's like, you know, that's not correct. And like the victim's eyes.
You put like 5 nails in here. You definitely committed.
Those look like big nails too. Like there's definitely some in his brain.
Yeah, he's like super dead.
Yeah, but he's like still alive.
Oh yeah, he's mumbling.
He's trying to say kill me.
Remember when like the Joker like cut his face off?
Oh yeah.
And then he had just like straps to keep it, to put it back on. Yeah,
like scotch tape.
In Death of the Family, like he like fucks with it a lot and he'll like put it on backwards and his eyes are poking out of his mouth and stuff. Oh, yeah,
that's what's happening here.
Yeah, but it's pretty funny.
So Cy pulls up to the same apartment where Jesse and Bridges are to like go kill him. Tulip pulls the knife out of her hand and she grabs her handgun. Detective Tool puts 2 and 2 together and he's like, oh, that reporter dude's the killer. So he goes to check in on Bridges and now they're just like all there now and they're in like a standoff, but Tool like slips on cum, I think.
Could have slept on anything, honestly.
It's definitely cum.
Okay.
It's definitely cum just on the floor and he slips on it like he's a fucking cartoon character.
Could have been lube.
And
or
so,
banana.
So there's a whole standoff. Jesse uses the voice of God to tell Cy to die, but he like kind of times it with a punch. So these people just think he's got like a killer left hook.
Yeah.
You know, but he then leaves with Tulip and he lets Tool get all the credit for the cleaver catch. And then Cassidy climbs out of his body bag and he leaves the morgue.
He asks the mortician for a cigarette.
Yeah. I thought that scene was great because he like gets out and the mortician who's clearly new is like.
He wasn't like as mortified as you think they would be.
Yeah.
You know?
He's like, oh, this is weird. But yeah, that's a good scene. And then Tulip and Jesse drive together to Dallas and then Cassidy goes his separate way to California.
To San Francisco. Oh, and Tool like helps out Jesse by like faking his death so that so people don't keep looking for him after the anvil stuff.
Yeah, because this whole time they were trying to find Jesse's body.
Yeah.
And they were going off of like dental records because everybody at that church was like
everyone in the town was there
pretty much. Yeah. So that was nice of him. But yeah, that was like a little 3-issue little arc about that, you know, killer. So it's just kind of interesting because there's less like big, you know, huge scope religion stuff here. But it was still like a kind of interesting story. You know?
Yeah, just like a quick little murder mystery thing that they got tied in with.
And so that's where we're stopping. I mean, the volume one or the book on Comixology has like 10 issues or something.
Yeah, the first book.
Yeah. So we're going to get into some Back Matter Matters.
Back Matter Matters. So we just skip to the back here.
I haven't even looked at it. So
cool.
It looks like a bunch of covers, which I'm cool with. I don't really know who does each one. Or does it say there?
The first one says Tim Bradstreet, John McCree, Doug Mankey, Joe Quesada.
Oh, wow.
Kieran Dwyer, Jim Lee, Dave Gibbons, Amanda Connor, Carlos Esquera, John Higgins, Dave Johnson, JG Jones, Brian Bolland, Jones. Bruce Timm.
What the heck? He's got some bangers on here.
Pretty stacked cover gallery. Oh, they kind of shows like their names on the signatures.
Yeah. So, okay. Let's see what we got here. This one with R space looks crazy. Is that the Doug one?
I don't know.
Why is you can't be eating ice cream so the if you look like that.
Fourth one, Doug, yeah.
Okay, so the one after that, Joe Quesada. That seems about right. Yeah, some good ones. Is that the Jim Lee one? Yeah, I can tell which one's the Jim Lee one.
Which one?
This one.
Ah, nice. Yeah.
You can kind of tell Jim Lee style, I feel like.
Especially his 90s style.
Yeah, 100%. I think it's all in like the cross-hatching that he does in like the faces. But yeah, that's Preacher. What would you rate this book, Daniel?
Just based off of these issues, I'd say I'd just give it like a pretty solid love it, you know?
Yeah.
Love it right after church, you know? Where you're congratulating yourself and giving yourself a little treat for going.
Yep.
You know,
I feel like this book is definitely a bit of a slow burn kind of story.
Yeah.
Which is nothing wrong with it. I think the way that they do it is really strong. And I can tell that like there's a lot of foreshadowing to like what's going to happen later. And like a lot of the payoffs seem like they'll be really strong as well.
Yeah.
So Yeah, that's like my just impression of just those issues.
I want to finish it just because you just hear so many good things about it. And this people are like, this is like Garth Ennis is like Watchmen, basically, you know? And so some people just this is like their favorite book, you know? And I think I can only assume that's because of it in totality, you know?
Yeah.
And so, but we just covered the first volume, you know? And so if that's like enough and you kind of move on, I have gone past this. I'm about like halfway through that big thing. Mm-hmm. And so I think there's like 30-ish issues in the deluxe. Yeah, that's like the 25-year anniversary edition thing. And there's like one more of those, and then that's like the whole thing.
Neat. Yeah, I feel like it'd be pretty worth it. I haven't like read a whole lot of 60-issue books. And so I feel like I'd probably enjoy this one if I were to read through it all. So yeah, I think overall I'd probably just rate it like a three-finger combo. You know, I'm not like crazy about it just because some of the concepts aren't something I typically am tied to for too long. But God, it's delicious. You know, looking at all that Steve Dillon art.
Yeah, dude, look at this. So Steve Dillon is still the artist, but the inker is different. And there's like kind of a drastic difference. Like not like that drastic, but like you can definitely, it's just like kind of rendered differently. Yeah.
I didn't think it looks too, it's not like distracting. It didn't look too different to me.
Yeah.
Does he ink him? Who inks him in like the first 7 issues?
I don't know.
I think it's just himself, right? Yeah. Steve Dillon just inks himself.
Ah. You got some letters in the back of this one. A lot of fucking letters. Holy shit.
Letters? Like?
Letters. Or like
fan letters?
Fan letters, yeah.
Oh, that's cool. You don't really see that too often in back matter.
Mm-mm.
Very cool. That's a good hardcover, though.
Dude, the dust cover thing was so annoying to try and read with.
Oh, I bet. Yeah, those are always annoying. Because it's like, they just lose any functionality as soon as you open the book, which seems kind of counterproductive.
Yeah, so you just got to like take it off in order to read it.
All right, let's get into the poll list, colon.
Shove it in your box.
The poll list, the poll list. What did you shove in your box?
Damn, big week.
Is it?
If you count the Free Comic Book Day titles as well.
Oh, yeah.
So I went to Free Comic Book Day. Pretty cool. I picked up...
Met Derek Robertson?
I did meet Derek Robertson, famed artist
for the Boys.
Of The Boys, or Batman Fortress, or the first 3 issues of Legends of the Dark Knight, which I got those signed by him, which is pretty cool.
Sick.
And I found out that he did a Constantine book with Tom Taylor.
Hmm.
And they didn't have like the collection there. It's a black label book. So it was like one of those prestige, like magazine sized books.
So newer?
Newer. Yeah. Somewhat like a year or two ago. And so I bought the 3rd issue of that because it's all they had at the shop that he was at the time. And I'm going to buy the first 2 and read them because Sophie typically likes Constantine as well. So I'll probably get that for both of us to read. But man, what a stand up guy.
Yeah.
I was dumb and I didn't bring any cash on me. And I didn't realize that he was going to be charging for signatures.
Yeah.
Turns out he doesn't really like to charge people for signatures, but he only asked me because there's a dude right in front of me that like just paid for signatures. And when he walked off, he was like, come here, come close. And he's like, I don't really like to charge people for signatures. So it's like, give me your books and I'll sign them. And I was like, I can go get some money. And he's like, no, it's fine. It's fine. And so he like signed him and like, you know, personalized them. He like wrote my name and stuff. It was super cool. So
nice. He's
cool.
Can't resell them.
Yeah. Well,
that's a charge.
Yeah. I don't think I would ever, but
yeah.
Yeah. I think that's why he wanted to like write my name on it or whatever. People who resell that shit. It's so annoying. Just like keep it. It's cool.
Yeah.
So yeah, I had him sign Batman Fortress and Legend of the Dark Knight. And he was like, how'd you like the Dark Knight thing? And I was like, it's really cool. It's cool that you got like 3 and everybody else got like less. And he was telling me that there's like it was an unfinished project that he was working on. And that was like the time to like do that project, which is pretty cool.
Hmm.
And we talked about the Green Lantern, the squirrel Green Lantern that's in Batman Fortress. His name is Dale. They created him as like a nod to Chip. And so it's like Chip and Dale, you know?
Ah.
And I didn't know that. I thought that was pretty cool.
Well, isn't there a 3rd one?
Gnort, yeah.
Ah. How many fucking squirrel Green Lanterns do you need?
That's all that I'm aware of. There could be more, though.
More? Yeah, I mean.
There's one that's a cat. That's Dexstar. He's a good one, too. He's a Red Lantern, though.
Yeah, I was about to say.
But, yeah. So then, anyway, the free comic book titles I picked up was the Spider-Man Venom one.
Yep.
And then a, like, Justice League one. And then Fireflies, which is, like, a Jeff Lemire book that's coming out, I guess.
Right.
So those are ones I picked up. And then I had Sophie, since she was there, pick up another Marvel one, which is, like, the Avengers one, I think.
Uh-huh.
And then she just picked up TMNT on her own. But yeah,
I was able to get five, but I only got like three, I think.
Yeah, that's fair.
I got a Fishflies, Spider-Man, and then there's an
Fishflies, not Fireflies. Yeah,
Fishflies, and then Umbrella Academy.
Yeah,
there's,
that was cool.
I guess there's some new book that's coming. I wanted to make sure it wasn't just the first issue, yeah. But it's for like a new book that's like coming.
Is it Gabriel Ba and
yeah,
and them going back?
Yeah.
Gerardway. I forgot his name for a second.
Yep.
Cool.
Did you...
And then this...
They didn't have any sales there?
Dude, they didn't. And lame. Like, I know like the idea of Free Comic Book Day is to get people to come to the store and then like maybe they'll buy other stuff.
Yeah.
So I bought the first like hardcover of Dark Knights of Steel. Is that what cool. It's called? The Tom Taylor one?
Yeah.
Dark Knights of Steel, I think. Yeah. And that includes 1 through 6.
Okay.
And I read the first three. I don't really remember that much what happens, but I remember thinking it was like a really good book. So we should do that actually for one of our weeks.
No.
Dark Knights of Steel. Really good. Game of Thrones, but DC.
Write it down.
I will.
Well, hopefully you win the coin flip. I left the coin right here.
No, we're doing coin flips. Okay. I'll write it down. And then this week I picked up Daredevil 11, Danger Street number 6.
Ah, shit.
Phantom Road number 3, Saga. Ambassadors number 4, and then Green Lantern, that new series came out today.
Who's writing that?
Oh, fuck. I had his name in my head, and then you asked me, and then it just fucking disappeared. I can't remember.
Did you get Nemesis 5?
No. I don't know. I don't think I'm going to pick up the series.
That's like literally the last book.
Is it really?
Yeah.
Oh, shit. I'll have to go pick it up then. But Daniel.
You didn't like it?
When you buy the Green Lantern book, they give you a little ring.
Yeah, Ash did that too.
Yeah, so I have this little ring now. It doesn't fit on my fucking Shrek hand fingers, but...
It's a me.
I got big fingers. I feel like my fingers are really small, but they got some girth on them.
Dude, it's even got the little thing so you could stretch out to your
I know,
fucking sausages.
But I don't want to break it. But yeah, I thought that was funny.
This is literally like the cheapest thing. Like
I know.
I gave you like a metal one for Christmas.
I know, I still have it. It doesn't fit on me anymore, but I still have it. It's on my Green Lantern shrine.
Yeah.
So I thought that was fun.
So yeah, Ambassadors, Nemesis, Saga. Yeah, we got most of the same stuff.
So Nemesis done? It was just 5 issues?
Yeah, 5 or 6.
Interesting. So what's Jorge Jimenez doing now?
Probably Batman.
That'd be sick.
Yeah.
I hope so.
Because he's doing covers and stuff. And the plan was for him to not be off of Batman. He made it seem like he's going to do both, but obviously that's not really feasible. So yeah. I think he's just going back to that.
Oh, okay, cool.
So he might have just had like an arc off.
Or I'm something. All into that. Yeah, that's cool.
Did you read anything new?
I read the Green Lantern book. That's the only thing I was able to read this week. But
pretty good.
Yeah. It wasn't like, oh my God, everything's changing or whatever. It's just kind of like status quo Green Lantern comics, which I like. Mm-hmm. I can tell that there was a bit of a Top Gun sort of inspiration that went into this, it felt like.
Sure.
Because the whole idea is like Green Lantern's, he's like, I'm done being a Green Lantern.
Now he's Tom Cruise.
And now he's Tom Cruise. So he goes back to like Ferris Air. And he like asks Carol Ferris, like, hey, can I have a job? And she's like, maybe. And then he like outflies the new pilots or whatever. But it turns out they don't fly jets anymore. They only fly drones. So he's got to like get used to that or whatever.
Okay.
And like he didn't realize until he fucking crashed into the side of the side of like a cliff. And I'm like, oh, my God, is he just like he's just dead now? That's it. But no, it was a drone. It was a good little switch around.
It's funny.
But yeah, it's pretty much he's just Tom Cruise.
Yeah.
And there's a backup story that was like a John Stewart thing as well. And I think that's going to be a running thing as well. So that was pretty cool.
Cool.
But I enjoyed it. Yeah.
Nice.
For some reason, Sinestro's on Earth as well. And he's going to bars and he's just like wearing like a hoodie to like hide the fact that he's got this pink ass skin.
Yeah. Big ass hoodie.
And I was like,
for his big ass
why
head.
Are you here? Yeah. I don't remember the reasoning why anything's like happening.
Lex Beer.
Because that Green Lantern, the last Green Lantern series, I think got canceled. So
yeah.
Anyway. That's what I read this week. What'd you read?
Well, on my free comic book day thing, there was a sale at Ashab Comics because it's the best comic shop in the world.
Yeah, better store, to be honest. But
I got the Last Days of Black Hammer, the Jeff Lemire Substack book.
Cool.
The trade came out through Dark Horse, so I got that.
When did that come out?
Like a week or a month or two ago.
Oh, okay.
Like not that long ago. Wait,
is the last Black Hammer?
The Last Days of Black Hammer. And so it's not the last books about the Black Hammer property. it's the last days of the original Black Hammer, which is the dad.
Gotcha.
And
gotcha.
So it's kind of a
pretty much prequel
to the first run.
Wow. Lemire did the Star Wars.
Love Dark Horse ordering. It's like, it's kind of a nightmare.
Yeah.
But I like follow it because you start at the beginning.
It's good.
Yeah. I also got the second Deadpool Samurai manga. Ash had the second book of that.
There's a second one of that?
Yeah.
That's cool.
Yeah.
We should read that. Didn't you like it?
Yeah, it's really fun. It's like, it's got like, there's a lot of jokes that I think work really well. And it just plays into that like a lot.
That's fun.
But last time, prior to going to the shop, I got World Tree by James Tynion.
Yeah, I saw that come. That came out like a week or two ago, right?
Yeah. So I read the first one of that. It's like, okay.
The cover looked interesting to me.
Yeah, there's like that. So the woman that's on that is like a nudist.
Oh.
Yeah, like a nudist anarchist. And I think that's what probably will keep a lot of people reading that book. Because other than that, it's like fine. Like comics about tech and like online problems are kind of odd to me because it's like you have to portray that like in pictures, you know. It's a book about kind of like a dark web, but it's called the undernet. And when people look at the undernet, they go crazy. I don't know, it's okay.
Interesting.
I read the first one and I wasn't totally put off by it, but
I get the idea, you know, internet, you know, is a little toxic for the mind. Is that the idea?
That's probably like an extreme version. He's probably having this like extreme metaphor for how he feels about the internet or whatever.
Okay, but, interesting.
So I read that.
Can't all be winners, I guess.
Yeah, I read Phantom Road 1 and 2.
Okay.
Good stuff. I like it a lot.
Don't know what's happening, but it's great.
A pretty good idea what's happening.
Yeah.
Yeah, I thought it was really engaging, flowed really well, and it's good.
I love Walta.
I know that. Yeah, he's great.
Yeah.
It's not really like a zombie thing, but I'm still a sucker for zombie things, you know?
It's like zombie parallel. You understand that like explanation? And they're like in between dimensions, that there's like a rift in some sort of connection in between two dimensions or whatever, and that's where they are?
Yeah, they're in the connection. And they can see both universes.
Did you like the salt that he used to explain it?
Yeah, that helps a lot.
Yeah. I was reading it and I was like, okay, I guess.
I was like, oh, here's the salt thing Nathan was talking about. So yeah, pretty good. I'll probably get 3. I like that's $4 rather than 5. That's a big kicker for me, you know?
Yeah. You're big on, you know, not spending money on good comics.
It's better than, because I'd rather get 2.5 comics than 2 comics, you know?
Sure.
Or 5 for $20 rather than 4 for $20.
Yeah. Yeah.
I love some value. Caught up on Saga.
Nice.
This is like a very good arc. You should catch up.
Okay, I will.
The one prior is like kind of like a conduit one, but still good stuff. I read Ambassadors number 3 with that new artist.
Travis Charest or something.
Pretty close, I bet. But yeah, he's really good.
Yeah, super good. Apparently it was like his first comic in like 12 years or something. He was like a 90s artist.
I thought it was like his first comic, full comic ever.
No, but the dude that runs the comic shop that knows my name, but I don't know his, for Strange Adventures, the one I go to, he was telling me about it. And I guess he was like a big 90s artist for DC or something, and he had like stopped doing comics to do his own stuff for a little bit, and then I guess Mark Miller just dragged him back into it. But he's really good at like detail and like architectural detail, I noticed. And then also his like facial expressions, it seemed like took like a lot of inspiration from like a Norman Rockwell or something like that.
Rockwell, I saw some like Sorrentino in there.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, really good stuff.
So I enjoyed that. What do you think of Ambassadors so far?
I thought this was a good issue, and I thought it kind of explained a little bit how well this concept would go,
mm-hmm.
like in that world. And I like how it's kind of focusing on like some characters, like each issue, which I think is a strong point. I'm excited for Olivier Coipel.
Oh yeah.
For on the next issue.
Is that who's his?
That's on that's four.
Okay.
Yeah. And he's goated. So
he is.
That'd be cool.
I'm just excited on where it's going. Like, I'm sure by issue 5 or 6, we'll have like a much better idea of like what's going to go on and stuff like that. And I kind of want to see the other characters interact. Like, I get what he's going for right now, to get like these superstar artists to cover like the origins of these different heroes and stuff. But
it's like, how is it supposed to like wrap up?
Yeah. You know, how are we supposed to go from there, you know, after we get introduced to everybody?
Yeah. It'd be super interesting. But, and then I read the first issue of Supergirl, Woman of Tomorrow.
Oh, okay. Nice.
That book's amazing.
Incredible, right?
Yeah. That first issue, I was...
Bilquis Evely.
Yeah.
Awesome. Unbelievable.
So good.
And beautiful. Matthews Lopez, who did the coloring for Step by Bloody Step.
Yeah, that's whatever.
Unbelievable. What are you talking about?
I'm like, yeah, no, it was really good. And then it was just... It's like Tom King, like at his best.
Yeah.
You know?
It's really strong.
He's like... I don't know, pulling back on what...
I'll have to get that sign when he comes here. I was thinking about what I need to...
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think I'm going all 3 days, so I might just like bring different books each day. I don't know if there's going to be like a big line, but...
I'll give you shit.
Okay.
So, yeah, that's what I read. Oh, cool. Also, I read...
A lot of reading this week from you.
Yeah, dude. When I read our book and edit the previous podcast on Sunday, I get so much reading done throughout the week, you know?
Yeah.
I just feel like I'm free, you know?
Yeah, you're a free man.
So, I told you I was reading Zom 100.
Yep.
I'm not going to tell you everything that happens, but like just some things I thought were funny.
Mm-hmm.
So animals can become zombies in this world, and they go to an aquarium and there's a zombie shark.
Whoa.
And it's fucking sick.
That's awesome.
And it like, I guess it ate all the people that like worked there or something.
How did it do that?
I don't know.
Does it come out of the water?
I don't know. And the glass like breaks or something. And so the zombie shark gets out of the tank, but somehow... The people that he ate, their legs like ripped out of the zombie shark's stomach, and like it was able to walk.
Whoa.
And like, I don't know. They didn't explain how they were connected.
What would they need to explain, Daniel?
Yeah. They're able to like fucking cooperate. So was it
really just disproportionate size legs? Yeah, to like,
it was human legs.
How many legs?
It was like probably like 10 people's legs sticking out.
I was just imagining two little legs that he was bouncing on.
And so they thought they were fine, but then the fucking zombie shark comes at them on flatland.
This is the best book ever made,
it,
I think.
It might be. But what was really fucking interesting about this is like, did you know that there's like shark suits that people wear?
Yeah.
Yeah. So at like aquariums and stuff in like SeaWorld or whatever.
Yeah. It's got like the chain link sort of armor kind of feel. Yeah.
They get one of those. And so they're able to like, it's... Because the dude wants to be like a superhero or whatever, kind of. And he gets one of those shark suits and he's able to survive against like normal zombies.
That's smart.
Yeah. I'm like, this is fucking genius as far as survival.
Yeah. Super genius.
It doesn't help with it like hurting or anything. Like it still feels like someone's fucking biting your arm. Yeah,
it's still hurting if they broke skin. I think that's still possible.
Yeah, but it wouldn't break through like the suit. That's what they're going with.
Okay, gotcha.
I looked it up and they're like... $7,500, like real ones.
Yeah, they're protecting you against sharks, Daniel.
I didn't think they'd be that fucking expensive.
It's not a big market either.
Maybe 8,000.
It's not like they're mass producing that.
7,000? No, no. It was just really funny.
Why would you look it up?
I was fucking curious.
You're like, what if this happens?
Like, what if I just had one of these just in case?
You would be the most set for a zombie apocalypse for sure.
But we watched Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3, didn't we?
We sure did.
So how do you want to do this? Should we talk about 1 and 2 and then 3?
Yeah, so we have a big thing.
Or should we talk about 3 and then debate 1 and 2 in like a separate video?
Let's debate 1 and 2 in a separate video.
Okay.
And let's just talk about 3.
Yeah. This episode's already getting there.
Yeah.
So Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3. What did you think, Nathan?
Incredible. I think it's probably my favorite.
Favorite Guardians?
Yeah.
Wow.
I think the Guardians are like 1, 2, and 3 as far as like how much I like each one, you know? But yeah, this one's really strong. Like it's like a long movie, but you don't feel it, you know?
Okay.
And I think I didn't watch that many trailers because I just wanted to like just be there, you know, and figure things out as it was going.
Sure.
But what I did see of the Guardians trailers, I could tell that James Gunn has some sort of control over what they're showing, or like he's kind of selective on what they're showing us to like lead us a certain direction.
Sure.
Spoilers, by the way, I was for sure. I was like, someone's dying. You know, it seems like it'll be Rocket, but if it's not Rocket, it'll be somebody else. Someone's dying.
He told us like this is the last time this team would be together.
Yeah.
And so.
Yeah. So he's very tricky about dying. That. Yeah. And so I will probably like just watch all the trailers for any like James Gunn movie, because he's good at like, you know, so making you surprised when you walk in the theater. But
yeah,
I really enjoyed it. I feel like there's a lot of characters, but they all kind of like did something, you know.
Yeah,
like, you know, there's Cosmo in there, and I love seeing Cosmo. Didn't really play a big part in the movie, so I don't really know why Cosmo was there.
She helped.
Yeah, but she helped.
This movie was weird as fuck.
Super weird.
It was so weird. That's like weird. What I was thinking for most of it, like the first half. I'm like, this is fucking weird.
Yeah, it was so weird that I was like, I hope I enjoy this, but I wonder if the people that we're with, would we see it with like a dozen people,
normies,
I wonder if they're gonna like it. And of course they left the theater and they're like, that was amazing. And I'm like,
well, I'm like, really?
I'm like,
are you sure?
Were you watching the Counter Earth stuff and you were like, wow, this is great, you know?
Do you see that fucking pig thing, you know?
The pig thing?
Yeah. The
ugly one?
The mech pig that was doing the bidding.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and then the other bird or whatever.
I thought you were talking about the one that Mantis let out.
No, not that.
That was voiced by Pete Davidson, I guess.
I don't even know what you're talking about, so.
Okay. But yeah, so.
So it was so weird to where I'm like, damn, they gave him a lot of freedom. Maybe too much freedom.
No, I think the right amount of freedom.
I don't know.
I think that
I'm just surprised that they let this happen. With how they are, what it seems normally.
Yeah, there's some. I think the whole organic like prison thing that they had going on, or whatever that was,
the weirdest part.
The weirdest part, very long as well. Like we spent a lot of time there. I felt like
it was really gross. It was like a bio space station kind of thing.
Yeah.
And it was all very fleshy looking.
Yeah.
There's squishy hairs growing out of it.
Oh, it's kind of gross. Yeah.
And so space is weird. And like, if there's like a bunch of aliens and stuff, they should be weird.
Yeah. 100%. You
know? And
which is what I appreciate about this.
The security guard suits, I think, was the most unsettling thing for me.
Very fleshy.
I'm like, what the fuck is that?
But yeah. But then if it was like a traditional, like, nothing space armor, you wouldn't think anything of it.
True. Yeah.
And so that's why, even though they were weird and I feel like they could have been designed a little bit differently, I can respect that he just took a big swing, which like, is what I appreciate.
I get everything.
Yeah, I get it.
I'm
too,
just like, this is still weird.
Yeah, you know? Super weird. And then like looking at it, Nathan Fillion was pretty cool, I guess.
Yeah, he looked great.
He does look good.
Yeah, I'm surprised like he wasn't able to be like, I think they something about Wonder Man, like he could have been Wonder Man, but they cut it because he was too old or something. But
yeah, it's dumb.
I thought he looked pretty good. He could be Wonder Man for like 10 years.
Totally. Yeah,
I thought this one had like the weakest soundtrack of the three.
Yeah, I agree.
I listened to it a couple times this week, and it's definitely growing on me. But I am not stepping back from like its weak parts.
Yeah,
it's I think No Sleep Till Brooklyn, Nathan.
Yeah, which like why? You like everybody, I don't know.
I thought that was placed well enough, but it just could have been like any other
like
song.
That as like a song choice, it's like I feel like the other two movies are really good at popularizing songs.
Yeah.
Or like choosing even songs that are popular but placing them in a good point, and like maybe not everybody's heard them. Like that Redbone song obviously is super blown up now.
Yeah.
Still a good song in its own right, but just like in the context is really good. And then I hear No Sleep Till Brooklyn. Is that what it was?
Yeah.
And I was like, I guess it's because I'm like familiar with them more.
Yeah. I kind of love those because I'm being exposed to this music I never would have before. And it's like really good, you know?
Yeah. Like, well, I think it's just as well, I think the older soundtrack is pleasing because it's like older music and like a crazy sci-fi scenario. And that that like juxtaposition is pretty cool.
I love an acoustic guitar in space.
Yeah, I know.
They do that like in all the other movies, and they even did it in this one. And it hits like so in such a specific sweet spot for me, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
Like, yeah.
And so when I hear that last song, like it's a good song. I forget what you want.
Dog Days Are Over.
Dog Days. Yeah.
By Florence and the Machine.
Like I like that song, but for some reason didn't fit for me.
I just didn't even like that sequence at all, where everyone's dancing.
Oh, I liked it.
I was like,
I think there's good stuff in there.
Like, what is this?
But
how's this wrapping up?
Really sad backstory for Rocket, obviously.
Traumatic.
The linchpin of the whole thing is just the unbelievably sad backstory of Rocket.
It had like the Wii 3 animals in there. And I was like, oh no.
That's funny. Yeah.
I feel like Roxanne, like our vet tech cousin. Was just crying herself to sleep.
100%. I mean, there was some brutal stuff in there. Like, these are clearly characters that are made to be just the most vulnerable thing you could possibly think of. Teefs, are you kidding me? That is such a cute name, such a wholesome character. They don't really want that much out of life. They just want to see the sky and all that stuff. And then they get killed, and it's the most heartbreaking thing.
Mm-hmm.
And then even the Rocket reaction to that was interesting, because he's just like standing there crying because he's so just shocked by the whole thing.
Yeah.
I thought that whole sequence was really good. But it was,
I thought that all played out like really well and like really like organically. Like, it didn't really feel like forced, you know, to make you want to cry kind of thing.
Yeah.
And it obviously would have gone to this conclusion where they would have died somehow or just been like lost.
Mm-hmm.
And because Rocket is the only one that got out, you know?
Yeah.
And so you're just kind of waiting for that to kind of play out.
Yeah.
So I like the flashbacks in this.
Yeah, I did too. There's a lot of them. You know, I feel like there's some of the dialogue in there where I was like, okay, you're pushing this a little too hard, I think.
Because
There's parts where they'd just be like playing around or whatever in their cage. And they're like, man, it's good to have friends or whatever. And I'm like, I get it. You're like, you don't need to say that. And they say it twice.
Yeah.
They're like, man, I love having friends. I'm like... Clearly, you guys are friends. You don't need to like spell that out.
They're all playing and laughing. Like it's not a very funny situation to play catch or something.
Yeah, even if they were like running around and they're like, you know, doing that corny like playtime stuff, like that's fine. You could do that, but just to layer on like, oh man, you guys are my best friends, aren't you? Like,
yeah,
it like took me out a little bit, but still really strong stuff. Like, I like those characters.
What'd you think about Warlock or Adam Warlock?
I liked him.
He's
a creation that's very young and kind of dumb, so he's strong but doesn't really know how to use himself or his powers.
A very like scary entrance, which made him very intimidating.
He's a big gun and he hasn't been trained on how to use it, you know.
Yeah.
And so I think that's interesting, because obviously if he was super knowledgeable on how to do everything, he'd just wipe the floor with everybody. He'd grab Rocket and get out. And like, that's it. They're like, oh, I guess Rocket's gone. But the fact that he's young, it makes it believable that the Guardians, when they all kind of like come together to stop him, it like works.
Yeah.
So
I like how no one was really that like OP in this.
Yeah. They all seem pretty balanced. So thank God like Thor's not on the team, you know, anymore.
Yeah.
Because that would have, I think, really threw everything off.
I guess like James Gunn like asked Taika to like take him out of Guardians.
I think he would have done that anyway, because like, you're making a Thor Love and Thunder movie and it's like, oh, here's the Guardians here as well. It's like, what are you supposed to do with
that? Yeah, it would have been kind of bloated.
Yeah, but I'm glad that he's not in here. I like their interactions in like Avengers and stuff, but...
We got a shirtless scene from Will Poulter. Looked great.
He looked pretty good.
Yeah, I'm like, good for him.
Yeah.
Look at his shoulders.
Looks very strong. The Sovereign was a race created by the High Evolutionary.
Yeah.
Which is cool.
As an experiment, and I thought he did a pretty good job. I don't know why he kept working on that, you know?
Yeah, the High Priestess lady, whatever you call her, what's the mom?
High Priestess, probably.
High Priestess, whatever her name is. She looked very unhinged the whole time. Like, her hair was all, like, fucked up and stuff. And
yeah.
I was like, it's very clear that she's very worried about stuff, you know? But
right.
I enjoyed Adam Warlock for what it was. I really like the action scenes as well.
Yeah, there was a lot of
really good ones.
And nothing seemed like... just like basic fighting choreography, like, because you're in this like space world, you can turn off the gravity and fight and stuff, or there'll be like spaceship battles or whatever. And
yeah,
and there, it's not just like people that are the same height and the same like athletic ability. They're just like different sizes and different skills and whatnot. And so
and no one was really too, you know, there was like a race of baddies.
Yeah.
But that they weren't fighting the Guardians necessarily. They were fighting nowhere. And so I felt like that worked. But yeah, like, I really enjoy that scene with Groot and Star-Lord where they're in the High Evolutionary ship.
Yeah.
And like Groot's like, oh, surprise bitch, I got a lot of guns, you know?
Yeah.
And I was like, this is cool. And like really sick. Dynamic. And
that's a hot toy that they released with him with all of his arms coming guns. Out. It's yeah. pretty sick.
No wonder he bulked up. He's trying to hide guns.
Yeah, makes sense.
So that was a really cool scene. Obviously, he's got, scene.
He gets Groot wings.
Groot wings, yeah.
So hard.
Totally makes sense. And yeah, just like a lot of really, really good stuff there. Even when he was fighting like Adam Warlock, I'm like, this is a cool Groot, you know?
Yeah.
When he goes like kaiju mode, that was funny.
That
was pretty upsetting. Because he just like overextends himself and it looks like...
just to like scare away the animal people.
Yeah.
That hallway fight scene is like one of the coolest things we've ever seen.
Yeah, it's all like one shot, which... is crazy.
Probably all like it's like a CGI camera.
It's like a CG thing for sure, but it's still really impressive because you know what's like, you know all the elements, like you know what everybody's kind of doing and stuff, which is kind of cool.
Right.
And everybody like plays a part in it, which is interesting. So I really liked it. I really liked the idea of Counter Earth and that how it's was just trippy. Like it was super trippy, super weird. That was like the part where I'm like, damn, this is a weird ass movie.
That's where you thought it was weird?
Well, like the fleshy stuff, I was like, yeah, it kind of makes sense. You know,
yeah.
For James Gunn, he's very like, that seemed like his style. And then like Counter Earth. And I'm like, yeah, this is just strange. Seeing like all these
animal people,
anthropomorphic animal people and stuff. And like,
remind me a lot of Saga.
Like yeah, some of the characters in Saga. I was saying the same thing. It was really funny seeing them trying to interact with like that family. That was
yeah, they're just on Landfall, dude.
Yeah. And like, I really enjoy that Star-Lord doesn't know how to drive. I thought that was really funny.
He can drive like
a bunch of spaceships.
Spaceships, no problem. But
a steering wheel, he's like, I don't fucking. It seemed like that car was automatic or was manual as well.
Oh, maybe.
And so that would be super tough.
The F bomb was well deserved in that scene.
Yeah, it was.
And
for knowing that there was an F bomb in this movie,
I wasn't looking for it. But when it happened, I was like, oh, nice.
It was such like a perfectly placed f-bomb because there wasn't a whole lot of weight there. It was just like a really funny joke.
Yeah,
just like, open the fucking door, you know, like. So I liked that. High Evolutionary, obviously really good villain, I think, because he's insane. I like that he's not a villain trying to take over the universe. He's just doing something really unethical, you know?
Yeah. And I think people really like the villains that kind of have a point.
Yeah,
but this is not what that is. It's just a dude that's just like super evil and absolutely insane.
Yeah, I think that he just like is really, it's really tied to his ego that he wants to make like the perfect race.
Yeah.
And because he's got such a big ego about trying to do this, and the fact that he got outsmarted by one of his creations just like made him really fucked in the head.
Right.
And I could really see like his obsession start to get in his own way. And which is just a cool development because it was cool,
a great motive
for yeah him. Totally. And I think it was cool seeing Counter Earth have like just the same problems as Earth.
Yeah, you know, he thought it was perfect, but it really wasn't.
Yeah. And so he just like blows it up.
Yeah,
you clearly didn't have a whole lot of confidence in his ability to make a perfect Earth if he made a whole planet rigged to explode and at a moment's notice, you know.
He probably would have done that with the next one too.
Yeah,
if he kept going.
Probably
I loved that dude's makeup. Like, it was amazing.
Yeah, it was really cool. I like...
seamless. Like, just, like, the way that his face looks all stretched. It was super unsettling.
Yeah, really gross. And I like seeing how that happened with Rocket tearing up his face and shit.
Yeah.
So it was cool. And then, I like, that end fight scene with High Evolutionary. It was cool seeing Rocket, like, use more of his innovation to counteract, like, his telekinesis stuff.
Yeah.
So that was cool. Clearly, he's been thinking about this, you know, a lot. So... I don't know. All very good. I liked just the individual character arcs and stuff like that. Here's why I like the dancing at the end, Daniel. Mainly for one reason.
Because fucking Drax is like, dancing's for pathetic people or whatever.
Yeah. He's totally just come around on the idea of dancing. He's like, I do not dance. Dancing's, yeah, pathetic. But it's really nice seeing that because he's clearly a dad. He's clearly like a very good dad. He interacts with the kids very well.
That was nice. One of my favorite jokes in this is like they couldn't communicate with like the children, but then he starts speaking their language. He's like, why didn't you tell us you spoke their language? He's like, why didn't you ask? And that's like immediately what I thought after she said that, and then he said it. I'm like, oh, that's so satisfying.
Yeah, that was a good joke. I heard you laughing like the artist in the theater.
Yeah, no, that was just a joke for me.
It was a good joke.
The part that like broke me was Peter Quill like yelling when he thought that Rocket actually died.
Yeah.
Like top tier acting.
Yeah, it was really good acting.
Incredible.
That's what got me in Guardians 2 when he was like watching Yondu die. Like that part like made me cry in the theaters.
Right.
Because it's like he's like a fairly pretty good actor. I think people give him a lot of shit.
Yeah, no, he's great.
But I've always kind of liked him.
And
but yeah, that was really strong. I started to tear up. I didn't like shed a tear the whole time. I was specifically trying not to because people were saying it was so sad. So I wanted to see if I could do it.
My tears never fall, but my eyes do get watery.
Yeah, you know? My eyes got a little watery, especially at the point where he's like about to like let go. And he's like talking to Lila. Is it Lila? Layla?
Lila, yeah.
Lila and her friends. And he's like, can I come? You know?
When he's about to cross over, but he sees the light.
Yeah, he sees the light, and like his friends are there, and he's like, "I want to come." And then like Lyle has to be the one to be like, "No, not yet." And so I kind of figured he wouldn't die at that point because he's got to save out a group, you know.
Yeah,
but yeah, it was very surprising that nobody died.
Yeah, I thought at least you think it'd be like Drax and then like Mantis or something.
Yeah, and so it was interesting because like you figure someone's gonna die. It's like this is the last time they're together or whatever. But it's sad in a different way because it's like a bittersweet thing. And I think everybody wants like another movie.
But yeah.
I don't think they will or nor should they need to, you know, because it was like a really well-rounded three movies.
Because it works well because of James Gunn, you know, and
so 100%.
And his like flavor on it. And so trying to force that again when he's obviously had other things to work on.
Yeah.
Is just kind of unnatural.
It's totally an impossible task if they were to try and make a volume four.
It was cool in the after credits where they said like the legendary Star-Lord will return.
Yeah. There's room for those characters to still be there somewhere, but the ones that don't want to come back don't have to come back, you know?
Yeah.
Like Batista.
Yeah. I was like, oh, good for Chris Pratt. Cause I can't imagine there's more of the Jurassic Park films and stuff like that. And, Amazon stuff can only make so much stuff, and so he's still like left on a hook. And there's not to say like the other characters won't show up, but I like that it's not just they're cut off from like Marvel, you know?
Yeah,
so they'll put them in where they're needed.
Do you think High Evolutionary will come back?
No,
I think he will.
Why?
Because
they didn't kill him.
What a better—
wasn't he on the ship that exploded?
Yeah, but like, does he die really, you know? What better place to have a Secret Wars than on a Counter-Earth instead of a Battle World?
There's other planets.
Yeah, sure.
And Counter-Earth blew up.
Yeah, but like another...
You think the High Evolutionary is going to be like the—
he won't be like the baddie. The
Beyonder?
He's not going to be the Beyonder, but...
He helps.
He can help. And be like, I'll just like make a spot for all your people to come in and you can play with them, you know?
Well.
So I think he's going to come back. I think... people are saying like, you know, make it him instead of Kang or whatever. I think that's dumb, but
yeah. The other after credit scene was giant Groot
and they're killing animals after they were trying to—
those things were vicious, okay?
I know they were vicious.
They're going to kill civilians.
But make it like pirates or something, you know?
Yeah.
But yeah, that big Groot, I'm like, fuck yeah. So sick. Give me some more of this.
I've heard people call him like King Groot. I thought he just kind of looked more like the first appearance Groot.
Yeah, just bulkier.
Yeah. And so that was really cool.
Bulky
and
Groot era.
The girl that was in it, that's like Quasar.
Really?
Phyla Vell.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Interesting.
Yeah. No one says that, but like, I guess if you look it up, that's her name.
Interesting.
And that was the Quasar that we know from the run that we read.
Yeah. Okay.
So I was like, fuck yeah, dude.
That's pretty cool.
So I'd like to see like Quasar in the future.
I like that Adam Warlock is there.
Yeah.
I like all the Gamora stuff. It seemed like for a second there, like Star-Lord and Gamora are going to like kiss. And I'm like, please don't do that. This is not needed, you know?
Yeah, like that's like, but it's still clearly a platonic thing.
Somewhat, yeah. Half platonic.
Yeah, like they definitely, but she did come around kind of more feeling a part of like that family.
Yeah, I'm glad that she found a family, you know? If it wasn't like the Guardians, she found it in the Ravagers.
Yeah, but she's cool. Still like... the Guardians were like growing on her, you know?
Did it feel inconsistent, like what the Ravagers are kind of up to? Because in the first Guardians, obviously the Ravagers are like these weird space pirates. Turns out there's a larger, you know, network of Ravagers.
Yeah.
That are still like doing shady stuff, but they specifically, you know, outlawed Yondu's Ravagers team. And then in this, It seems like they're doing something somewhat kind of noble, at least in their mind.
They're probably just more selective with like their jobs.
Yeah.
What do you mean noble?
I don't know. It seemed like they were trying to, weren't they like trying to protect that? I don't know. Maybe I just have to watch it again, but
yeah, because I can't remember trying to, like, why they stopped like that, the fleshy planet or whatever.
Yeah, because it seemed like they were trying to like protect that fleshy planet or something, but then they ultimately let them in. So I don't know.
They might have been hired for like protection or something.
Yeah, maybe that's what it was. Maybe it was like just solely they were there for protection.
Or maybe they just showed up to show that they can control the situation when Nebula like contacted Gamora.
Yeah.
You know, and yeah, so just true, to make sure that she was safe and then kind of help out with that whole thing, because mm-hmm. they didn't like jump in when like they went into the little butthole spaceship.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's true. I like the Ravager outfits for the Guardians.
No, those are sick.
Those suits were pretty cool. I think Mantis
was weird that there's no helmet from Star-Lord. We didn't see it once.
James Gunn said that he left it on nowhere. You just like said that on Twitter. I would have liked to have seen like a different iteration of like the helmet.
Yeah, like the old one.
Because that would have been the really one that helpful.
Looks like Optimus Prime.
Yeah, exactly. It would have been really helpful when he was out in fucking space getting his face blown up, which is very upsetting, by the way.
Yeah. Is that something that's supposed to happen?
When you're out in space?
Yeah.
It's weird because in the first movie, he just gets all icy.
Yeah.
And then this, it's like
gets all frosty.
Your face is fucking exploding. But it could have been explained that his face was all frosty because he was still half celestial. And so maybe that's why he was surviving as long as he did. You can make that argument. But
what are you saying about Mantis?
Mantis is interesting because her powers seemingly change a little bit. Like, you can just control someone to start dancing or whatever. Like, you can inflict emotion
on
people. Her powers change a little bit. But I think I like that it seems like she's going to go like control like a hive mind of creatures somewhere, because she's going off on her own, right?
Yeah.
And she can, like, you know, work with animals and stuff like that. I think it'd be really cool if we see her go to some planet where like all the animals are connected with like a hive mind and she just controls like a whole army.
That'd be cool.
Yeah. So
she probably could.
I'm saying that now in either Kang or Secret Wars or whatever, we're gonna see Mantis again. She's gonna be fucking sick.
It's gonna be 5 years before we see any of these people again.
100%. And I hope that's the case, because I want them to, you know, do their own thing. But
yeah.
Yeah, really liked it. I think this is one that's my favorite.
Wow.
Of the three. Best trilogy as well, I would say.
I'd have to think about it. I haven't thought that deep about it.
The only one that comes close, I think, is Spider-Man. The Captain America one's pretty good. I wasn't crazy about the first movie, though.
Yeah.
Iron Man's got some rocky ones. Thor's got some rocky ones.
Yeah, I guess, most complete trilogy.
Yeah.
But, okay.
Anyway.
Good stuff.
Yeah, good stuff. I enjoyed it.
But what are we going to read next week, Nathan?
What are we going to read next week?
Do we have anything?
Yes. American Born Chinese.
That's a Disney Plus series.
Yeah, it'll be coming, I don't know, next week, I guess.
Gene Luen Yang, is that his name?
He's the writer, yes. Yeah. And I think he's like the artist on it.
I think he does art.
And because I saw it and it was like, bye, Gene, and then inks or colors by this other guy. I'm like, whoa, he does art. Cool. Yeah, I started. It's fun.
Cool.
It's very interesting.
We will read that next week.
I can't wait. Well, thank you everybody for listening. Thank you for watching. We got links to our other stuff in the description.
For sure.
Like, comment, subscribe if you want.
Yeah.
You can email us, tell us what you think about Guardians 3. And what you rank them amongst the other Guardians.
Yeah, I'm curious. I think my ranking is different from literally everybody else's, just because I like the first one.
Don't know
least.
Anything. And yeah, well, thank you. And bye.
Bye.